And we're back here on 93.3 CFMU, Unusual Sources, 5 to 6 p.m., giving you the news you don't ordinarily get to hear in the corporate media. And we have a news source with us today, and that is Ottawa-based author, activist Stephen Gowans. And I just wanted to mention Stephen here. His articles are being distributed on Global Research, Race and History, and Information Clearinghouse. And he's placed his articles on his blog, which is entitled What's Left, which is available at gowans.wordpress.com. So, Stephen, thanks very much for being with us here today.
Oh, good to be here.
Well, I got your blog address right. Is that correct? Gowans.wordpress.com?
That's it.
Okay, so that's where we can find all the articles. Great. Well, today we are going to be talking about Iran. You're one of the Canadian critical activists and scholars who's looking at the way the media has approached the issue of reporting on Iran. And it seems that there's some distortions about, and then we can talk about what the government's been saying too. I mean, I've got a situation here where there's been Obama and Hillary Clinton and Eli Wiesel, and they're all saying the same thing. Iran is trying to develop nuclear weapons, you know, and we're familiar with the process. The Iranian government, they say they're not developing nuclear weapons, and then the U.S. says that it is. But what Stephen here is covering is the way that the media treats the issues, in particular the New York Times. So, Stephen, why do you think the New York Times is trying to manipulate opinion on this issue?
Well, let me just step back a bit then to answer that question. You know, there are a few arguments that are used to advance the case for some kind of aggressive action against Iran, whether it's, you know, the possibility of military strikes or sanctions or destabilization, by which I mean the funding and training of overthrow movements or sabotage. And the major arguments are Iran is developing nuclear weapons, as you've said, and Iran's president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has no legitimacy. So he didn't win the last election, or he did through fraudulent means, and the majority of Iranians want him gone. But both claims are myths, in the same way that Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction were myths. And you could say, well, you know, how could this be? Everyone says that Iran is developing nuclear arms. And Ahmadinejad has no support within Iran. Everyone who says that Iran is developing nuclear arms also says that Ahmadinejad has no legitimacy. But it's not true, really, that everyone says that. I mean, politicians, professional bamboozlers say that. And because what the media does is report what politicians say, it seems like everyone is saying it. But what the U.S. intelligence community is saying, and what international inspectors are saying, and what academics who study public opinion in Iran are saying, is that these claims are myths. I mean, they're lies intended to justify a course of action whose real reason lies elsewhere and are concealed. So, to go to the nuclear weapons issue, if we look at that, last September, the International Atomic Energy Agency issued a statement cautioning, quote, that it has no concrete proof that Iran ever sought to make nuclear arms, much less perfect a warhead, unquote. According to the former head of the agency, Mohammed El-Baradi, the agency, and I'm quoting again, has not seen concrete evidence that Tehran has an ongoing nuclear weapons program. But somehow, says El-Baradi, many people are talking about how Iran's nuclear program is the greatest threat to the world. In many ways, I think the threat has been hyped. And he goes on to say that the idea that we'll wake up tomorrow and Iran will have a nuclear weapon is an idea that isn't supported by the facts as we have seen them so far. Then take Dennis Blair. Dennis Blair is the United States Director of National Intelligence. He told the U.S. Senate this month that, quote, Tehran was following a cost-benefit approach to its nuclear decision-making and that it remained unclear whether Iran's leadership would make a political calculation to begin producing weapons-grade uranium. So in other words, Iran has not begun to produce weapons-grade uranium, and it's unclear it will. So that was from the New York Times of February 3rd. So there's no evidence, according to international inspectors or the director of U.S. National Intelligence, that Iran is working on the production of a bomb. The U.S. National Intelligence estimate says Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. And while every now and then so-called new evidence arises that you can read about in newspapers or hear about on television news, new evidence that's supposed to contest that conclusion, the U.S. intelligence community has not revised its national intelligence estimate that says Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program.
I guess they don't want to lose face again after, I mean, the whole Iraq weapons of mass destruction scandal, which the U.S. administration politicians could say, well, our intelligence says there's weapons of mass destruction, and they can sort of pass it on and say, well, it's the CIA who told us that.
Yes, exactly. And while they don't say the CIA told us that anymore, I mean, they do continue to say, oh, they have nuclear weapons. The defense secretary, Robert Gates, spoke of Iran as if there is no question it's developing nuclear arms. The reality, he said, is that they have done nothing to stop their progress toward a nuclear weapon. On Monday, Hillary Clinton referred to Iran's pursuit of nuclear bombs and said, we don't want to be engaging while they're building their bomb. So, you know, I have no idea whether Iran is building a bomb. All I know is that there's no compelling evidence that anyone has brought forward that it is.
It seems the politicians must be working extra hard to get their own intelligence services to reverse the national intelligence estimate, because they're still going against their own intelligence service, which said that they're not trying to develop weapons right now.
Correct. And they say, we don't believe our own intelligence service.
Right. That's basically what they're saying. Of course, there are a couple interesting issues there. I mean, let's say that they're right and Iran is developing a nuclear weapon. I mean, is that something to be afraid of? I don't think it's something that should cause immediate panic, because even if Iran was able to eventually somehow develop a nuclear weapon, for every one they'd have, the U.S. would have 1,000. You know, what's the U.S. afraid about?
Well, you're right. So if Iran is building a bomb, we should ask, is it a threat? What kind of threat is it? You know, is it a threat to us, or does it pose what Edward Herman calls the threat of self-defense? That is, a threat to overt U.S. military aggression against Iran. And is it Iran with a nuclear weapons capability more dangerous than an Israel or an India or a Pakistan or, indeed, even a United States with nuclear weapons? I mean, Russian television was running billboard advertising in U.S. airports recently, which superimposed a picture of Obama upon Ahmadinejad and asked, quite reasonably, I thought, who's the greater nuclear threat? And I think there's no question, I mean, who's the greater nuclear threat? It's a choice between one country that has numberless nuclear weapons and has used them, and another that probably doesn't have any, and if it did, it doesn't really have the means to deliver them. And if it did use them, it would commit suicide. And what reason would it use them anyway? You know, as Uzi Rubin reminds us, and he's a private defense consultant who ran Israel's missile shield program in the 1990s, he says, Iran is radical, but radical does not mean irrational. I mean, they want to change the world, he says, not commit suicide.
Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking back to what you said from Edward S. Herman, the threat of self-defense. It seems that the only way to get the U.S. not to invade your country is to have the nuclear weapon, right? Because we saw Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction. Saddam said, we don't have any weapons of mass destruction. And so the U.S. invaded. And sure enough, they found no weapons of mass destruction. And then North Korea said, hey, look, we're developing some nuclear bombs here. And then that got the United States to the negotiating table. I guess one of the real politic lessons, you know, I mean, is that if you don't have a nuclear weapon, the United States looks at you in a different way. And I'm not saying that states should develop nuclear weapons, but looking at the example of what we just saw with Iraq and then North Korea, it seems to be telling countries that, oh, you better develop a nuke if you want to be left alone.
Absolutely. And in the case of North Korea, I mean, North Korea is quite clear that the only reason it's developed a nuclear weapons capability is to deter the United States from doing to it what it did to Iraq.
Yeah, so the U.S. has sent a very clear message, whether it wants to or not, about invasion and what you have to do to not be invaded. But again, we don't really know if Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapon or not. Certainly, the evidence you've given us from the National Intelligence Estimate, from the IAEA, all the professional inspectors don't believe that it's developing one or has capability to do so at the moment. At the same time, we're still getting the big buildup, the focus on Iran when other countries in the region are not being focused on. And so we know it's a very selective focus. And it's not the only kind of myths or propaganda that's going on. We had Hillary Clinton the other week. She said a lot about Iran. She said Iran's Revolutionary Guards are driving the country towards military dictatorship and should be targeted in any new UN sanctions. So what she says is, we're trying to send a message to Iran that we would be open to engagement. We still believe that there's a different path for Iran to take, but we're not going to stand by idly while you pursue a nuclear program that can be used to threaten your neighbors and even beyond. Now, that's what you said. I've abbreviated it. But essentially, it's going to those two messages you brought up at the beginning. Number one, Iran is developing nukes. And number two, the regime is not legitimate. And so if they don't do what we say, we're going to have to do sanctions and possibly other things. We heard that message before in regard to Iraq. And so the other issue then is the legitimacy issue. If they can't show that Iran is developing nuclear weapons, they try to say that the state is illegitimate. And that brings us to the issue of the elections. And you've commented on that. And I know during the Iranian elections, obviously there's that whole firestorm of Western media. Anytime anything happens in Iran relating to elections or protests, our media is all over it. And we know everything about what's happening from the CNN's point of view. So during the election itself, there's a lot of people saying, well, look, there's fraud going on. And then when Ahmadinejad won, they said there's no way he could have won, etc. We covered that story and we revealed that there were polls taken prior to the election that showed that it was believed that Ahmadinejad was going to win the election. So U.S. polling agencies, foreign polling agencies were saying that it was very likely that Ahmadinejad would win the election based on the popular support. Now, I understand some new polls have come out from Iran that were taken after the election. Can you tell us about what those polls said?
Yeah, the program on international policy attitudes, which is a program of the Center for International and Security Studies at the University of Maryland, published a study recently titled, and this is, get this title, Analysis of Multiple Polls Finds Little Evidence Iranian Public Sees Government as Illegitimate. The study is based on an analysis of multiple polls of the Iranian public from three different sources, so some from within Iran and others from outside Iran. There are a series of 10 recently released polls conducted by the University of Tehran. There were eight based on telephone interviews conducted by the U.S. firm Globespan, and there was a poll by the University of Maryland. And here's what the polls found. In the week before the election and after the election, in all polls, a majority said they planned to or did vote for Ahmadinejad. So those numbers range from 52 to 57% immediately before the election and then 55 to 66% after the election. So there may have been fraud, but if there was, it's clear the outcome didn't misrepresent the popular will, and it's also clear that Ahmadinejad has the support of a majority of Iranians. In several post-election polls, more than 7 in 10 said they saw Ahmadinejad as the legitimate president. About 8 in 10 said the election was free and fair. None of the polls found any indication of anything close to majority support for regime change. And large majorities, including majorities of opposition supporters, continue to endorse the Islamist character of the government. So the idea, then, that the Green Movement represents anything close to a majority of Iranians is a complete myth.
Yes, that's very interesting, and it reminds me of something in relation to this that I read. It came out on February 3rd, and it was a blog post entitled, Polls Suggest Everything You Think You Know About Iran's Tainted Election Is Wrong. It was by Joshua Holland, someone who had criticized the predominant media coverage at the time. And he reported on the same studies that have come out from PIPA and from other organizations. And so that's where you can find it. But I got a quote from the director of PIPA, and he says, our analysis suggests that it would not be prudent to base U.S. policy on the assumption that the Iranian public is in a pre-revolutionary state of mind. So, in other words, people seem to have overwhelmingly, or as a majority, accepted the results of the election, accepted the character of the Islamic State. They're not planning to overthrow it tomorrow. And the other thing is, apparently, according to one of the other pollsters, going into the election, as you said, 57% said they expected Ahmadinejad to win. And then, as you said, more than 7 in 10 saw Ahmadinejad as the legitimate president, 8 in 10 seeing that the election is free and fair. So these are the results by U.S. polling agencies, is that right, on what Iranians thought of their own election?
Right. Well, the results from polls done by the University of Tehran plus polls done by U.S. organizations.
Right. So we just keep getting the same consistent results then. That result is that the expectation was that Ahmadinejad would win based on voter preferences in Iran. So, like we said, all that stuff about vote fraud and all that, this is a smokescreen for the fact that most people still wanted him to win, or at least he had commanding support, more support than the opposition.
even beyond that, I mean, some supporters of the Green movement will say, when you point to these polls, well, it doesn't matter whether he had majority support or not. What's important is that the Green movement is a progressive movement and that, you know, Ahmadinejad is illegitimate. But these polls even go beyond simply suggesting that he won the election, that a majority, and a handsome majority of Iranians, regard the government as legitimate.
Right.
Contrary to the claim that it's illegitimate and that Ahmadinejad is a dictator.
Well, that's very interesting. It looks like when you actually, you know, poll Iranians and talk to them, you know, they have a different perspective than what you might be getting from U.S.-based and Western-based news reporting. So I find that very interesting. I think that means we have to have a critical eye open, and we have to look at whatever numerical results we can get and what we can get from polling information and just seeing the state of things in Iran. Because, again, there are a lot of pro-government demonstrations and protests in Iran, which we don't really see very much on CNN or CBC or and such. So when there's opposition events, we tend to receive a lot of coverage here in Canada and in North America on that. But stuff that shows support within Iran for the present government is not really demonstrated to us.
Right. And you know, it's interesting to contrast the movement against Ahmadinejad, you know, based on the myth that he's been rejected by Iranians, with the absent movement against the Afghan president, Karzai, I mean, who renewed his presidency in an election whose fraudulent nature is nowhere in dispute. No one disputes that the election was fraudulent. And, you know, Karzai was congratulated for winning an election through fraud by the U.S. President Obama. Well, Ahmadinejad is condemned in the absence of any compelling evidence his re-election was fraudulent, and where the bulk of evidence points to as being supported by a solid majority.
Yeah, that reminds me, the elections in Iraq are coming up too, so we'll get to see how those go. I understand the United States has been involved in negotiations as to who should run and things like that, so I guess that's sovereignty for you, right? Your Iraq controls its own affairs, except that it still has to work with the U.S. on how it holds its elections.
Well, elections also in which 500 candidates have been banned from running.
Yes, well, I guess they have a selective focus on democracy. Surprise, surprise. Okay, well, thanks very much, Stephen. I really hope you are able to cover these issues in more detail once again. You've written about the nuclear issue on your blog, and now that these election or the post-election results have come out, I hope to hear more from you on this. It's very interesting to see the things that we were saying have been confirmed, and that a lot of the stuff about fraud and whatnot was exaggerated in hot air as far as the actual election results go. So it's good that there's been further evidence to support your position and further things now to write about and talk about. So I thank you for keeping us aware of these issues, keeping them afloat in people's consciousness.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, that's great, Stephen. I think we'll have the opportunity to catch up on this. If you have other writings coming out about Iran and whatnot and other issues, we'll have to put you on the program a bit later. So thanks very much. People can catch your blog again at gowans.wordpress.com. That's right?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Stephen.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Stephen Gowans, Ottawa-based author and activist, regular guest on our program. Good to look at when you want to get behind the news, when you see issues in Zimbabwe, Iran, Cuba, North Korea, countries that the United States doesn't like so much, they're being covered. How are they being covered? Are we getting accurate coverage? Stephen Gowans is someone you can look to for the other side on that. So I thank him for being with us once again.